Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Neil Coulon could have ad-libbed all that himself, but he said he thought that it was better off because my name was on the show that I do it. Neil, welcome.
As always, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Neil, let's get to the low-hanging fruit. The low-hanging fruit is the world-famous call at the end of the game and the whining, moaning, and complaining as if the other 3.5 hours didn't exist. Your thoughts on the play and how it played out?
I think, objectively speaking, in a vacuum, as in no context, nothing, just the frames of the play, I see holding, and I don't think it's particularly controversial. I think it's pretty obvious that that's what he did in a vacuum. So I don't care what he said about it. I don't care whether it was in the Super Bowl or not. He held him. And I think the biggest thing is you have to look at the consequences of it as well. If you're an official, you have the subjective ability to determine whether or not holding, whether or not the hold that exists on every play meets the threshold of the penalty. Just holding a guy is not necessarily illegal. If the play is going that direction, if a player that has a chance at the ball is substantially hindered, that merits holding. To me, I don't think it's possible to argue that Juju Smith-Schuster doesn't score a touchdown if he's not held. There's nobody there. The play suggest that the officials interjected themselves into the moment, I think is kind of delusional. I mean, I understand the frustration of the moment. I'm sure the officials weren't real thrilled that they had to throw a flag, but you can't not throw that. I mean, they scored a touchdown if he didn't. Bradbury held him because he's gone if he doesn't. That's probably why Bradbury copped to it, because on film he knows what that's going to look like. And the official that's watching it can't not call it because it clearly hindered the play. So I get, you know, I'm first in line to complain about officiating in big moments. You don't want to see them part of it. More than anything, I wish the hold just didn't occur. I wish that they just scored a touchdown on the play. I think Philadelphia might have had a better shot at the game. If that was the case. So it turns out the hold was probably worse for them. But the reality is, down to that, didn't collapse in the second half the way the Eagles did. The officials didn't need to be lit on fire the way the Chiefs were in terms of execution. They were flawless throughout the second half. It, to me, it looked like another Super Bowl. And we've had more and more of these lately where one team is dominant for the first half, the other team is dominant for the second half, and it comes down to who has the ball last and with that executes the best. And to me, that was the Chiefs pretty clearly. It was a great game. I thought both teams played very well at times. I thought both teams were put into their bag at times as well by the opponent. I don't think it's necessary to make the officials part of it. And everyone wants to blame the officials for that. I kind of blame the fans. I don't think it needed to be that big of a storyline. It was a call that needed to be made. Unfortunately, I the situation was tough, but in a vacuum, they're calling that 10 times out of 10. There's no way around it.
Well, as I've tried to point out on the show repeatedly, there's a reason why he reached out. And that's because on the Eagles did such a poor job of defending what is essentially, there's slight variations to it, but they had trouble defending the same play over and over again. That was essentially the same play to Tony for a touchdown. That was essentially the same play to Sky Moore for a wide open touchdown. And Juju Smith-Schuster now was running the same play with maybe a slight variation of it. And you could tell Bradbury was like, oh no. And they got us again. And that's why he reached out, because Philadelphia seemed to have no concept of what Kansas City was trying to do down there. And you know, all the guppies ran to Travis Kelce.
I would probably counter with Bradbury was aware of it and was aware in real time that it was happening, and that's why he grabbed him. Because, to your point, it was roughly the same concept, not the same depth that they had run the other ones. But what Bradbury knows is there's no safety there. There's no help there. There's nobody there. And unless Patrick Mahomes somehow misses, which he hadn't the entire half, or he gets knocked on his butt, that's a touchdown. That's why he grabbed him. And that's why you have to call. You're going to throw a flag for holding on that play. It's not in competition. It's not trying to maintain leverage on a receiver. It's this guy's way behind me, and I have no deep help. He's going to score if I don't do this.
Yep.
You have to call it. Bradbury begged them to call it. And again, you know, I think that's probably why Bradbury just said, yeah, I grabbed him. Yep. There's no doubt about it. And it's because, you know, if anything, and I don't want to try to act all edgy and controversial, if anything, it's because, you know, from a schematic standpoint, they didn't want to defend that concept. Right. They put it all. You're asking a lot, even out of James Bradbury, who's an excellent quarterback. Mm-hmm. You're asking a lot to cover a double move on that side of the field with no help in short space like that. That's a difficult assignment, because it's not as if Juju Smith-Schuster has not built a career out of making tough catches across the middle. For him to cut back like that on a short, you know, whether that's a reverse post corner, whether it's sail, I'm not exactly sure, but it's a tough route for him to run. But when he turns his hips, he's got all Bradbury can do. He's behind him, and a bad throw is the only way that's not getting completed at that point. So Bradbury has to stop him and come up with some way to recover, and he's leaning inside. Juju wasn't.
He's got to
recover.
He has him beat off the line of scrimmage. He already has two steps on him. And that was the issue on the play. And I know people are like, oh, no, you can't call it. That was barely a grab. It's like, please, okay? You got to stop. You got to stop, okay? Guess what? The official's not the one that kicked a low-line drive punt. The official is not the one that dropped the ball and had it run back by Bolton for a touchdown. The official did not call the timeout for Nick Sirianni in the third quarter when the Eagles were offensively discombobulated, and he didn't have it at the end of the game. They would have had 45, 48 seconds at the end of the game if he hadn't called that timeout in the third.
Yep. And you look at the sequence of that, even Sirianni knew. It's almost as if he predicted it on the sideline. That's why he was yelling and screaming about it.
Yep.
And you don't blame him, because it's situations like that that end up costing you. And I wouldn't put any more weight on any one of those things, but I would say all of them where you were not able to recover. They were all fatal in their own way. None individually, but collectively, it was all the problem. And what's the difference? Kansas City didn't make a mistake. They didn't mess up in the second half. They were on point in everything that they did. And what was most impressive for me, and I picked Philadelphia to win this game, largely because of exactly what happened. I felt Hurts was going to make bigger plays. Hurts was going to run and move chains in downs that Mahomes was not going to be able to.
Yep.
Mahomes got his for sure. I'm not 100% sure that Mahomes, you know, let's just say he was a unanimous selection for MVP. I'm sure he was. For me, I'm probably not going to be the guy that votes for the player on the losing team, but I think Jalen Hurts was the best player on the field.
Hurts,
I mean, he was out of his mind.
Jalen Hurts, was the best player in the
throws,
field. Yep.
He made some throws that he hasn't made in his career. I mean, he was lights out. An excellent game for him, but the fumble, which, you know, I don't know if you mentioned that before, but that's a significant part of the game.
Yep.
The missed field goal that for Kansas City, that was a significant part of the game. I don't like looking at one specific play or even one call in a game and acting as if that swung the game. It might have swung the moment, but the moment was built by a lot of other things.
Right.
And it, unfortunately, my heart breaks for Hurts because, man, that fumble was just bizarre. I mean, it was like, whoa. Perfect bounce right to the defender. Yep. There was no getting him. Right when you saw it hop up perfectly off the turf, like, up, touchdown, he's gone.
Yep.
And it came at a time Philadelphia was just running roughshod over him, too. They were on fire. And it hurt. Mm. Man, oh, what a game he played. It hurt.
Hurts, in fact, to me, by a margin, was the best player in the game. Yep. By a margin. And the bounce up off the turf, I called it in 2016, a Penn State-Ohio State game where Penn State Marcus Allen blocked the field goal, and the ball bounced up perfectly to Grant Haley, and he ran it back for a touchdown, and Penn State won the game. I mean, it was tailor-made. That's what happened to Bolton on that play.
Yep.
Now we get to
got two of those.
I know. Yeah. You also had one on the second one that was
Bolton,
properly
Bolton
called
was the
back.
One not complaining about the turf.
Yeah.
Yes, it was the right call. It was just right. To me, it was funny. It's like, there's Bolton again.
There he is. He's right around. Guy had 182 tackles this year. He's always around the ball. Now we get to one of the fun parts of the year. What does everybody else do? Okay, now they got to make up ground. And actually, with the combine coming up, what did you think of DeMaurice Smith's comments on the combine? I agree with him about the interview part because you see the questions and they're just absolutely absurd. But I don't understand what his overall complaint about the combine is.
I didn't get that either. I tried looking more to find some more insight into it. Technically, he doesn't represent the players until they're drafted and signed.
Right.
So to go out of the way to defend, it doesn't make sense to me short of kind of seems, you know, sort of chaotic and weird. Like, from a common perspective, I can understand why the combine might kind of, you know, freak you out a little bit. The underwear Olympics, that whole bit. It seems like it's crazy, but at the same time, I don't understand the advocation for with every team. Do you want the prospects to go around, make 32 travel dates for exercise, essentially? That's not safe. It doesn't make any sense. I don't get what his beef with it would be, but if it is kind of the, I'm going to represent well beyond where I'm willing to accept because the interview part of this needs to go away, and I'm sending Roger Goodell a message to fix this, I don't blame him for that at all. I don't blame Roger Goodell for that either. I blame the probably over-testosterone area scout who
thinks
that they're getting something by playing pop psychologist and gotcha with a bunch of college kids.
Exactly.
That's nonsense. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I also don't think that it's a recognized and accepted practice for everybody. This is a collection of a few people who perhaps are over-promoted at that point, not understanding how things like this work. I don't want to be that guy, but I have experience within a locker room. I have experience within cubicles. I have experience within boardrooms. I have experience on football fields. There's a different way that you interact with people in those environments.
Yep.
If you take the football field guy and put him in a boardroom,
trouble.
You're running a risk. Yep. Let's just put it that way.
Yep.
And I can understand you're not competent. You aren't experienced enough. And I'm not trying to sound pompous when I say that. You might not be experienced enough to conduct a formal professional interview. There are questions to ask. If nothing else, there should be a good understanding going into something, not to be a chum alone. And that, unfortunately, is something that it's a message that's not spread enough, I don't think, obviously. They shouldn't have to answer questions like that. It's embarrassing for everybody. It's awkward. It creates far more of a problem than should be. But at the same time, it's not an indictment on the event.
No.
I mean, come on. The combine is weird. It is awkward in itself. I get that. But it's organized. It's pretty thorough. You get time to speak to teams, and teams get time to speak with players. I think both of those things should exist. It should be a two-way street. You want to check up on them after injuries. You want to see them live in person to see if they're as fast as they seem that they are on tape or they're not.
Yep.
You want to see what type of shape they're in. Remember Vontaze Burfict?
Yeah.
The best example. First-round talent. Everybody knew he had first-round talent.
Yep.
He showed up to the combine as if he hadn't done any work at all since his season ended.
Right.
And it turns out, well, you know, he hadn't.
Right.
That's why he ran like a 5.3 or something like that. I'm not drafting a guy that doesn't take this seriously enough to be in shape for the combine. That's an extreme example. But the idea is you need to be able to see these things up front personal. You absolutely cannot do that with every NFL team. That's nonsense. The chaos going into that, to say nothing of the fact that it has nothing to do with Demora Smith. You know, right. What are you doing?
Right.
You're not in charge of this. You don't run this. They're not even your clients. I think it has just more to do with, you know, a position statement. I don't think that he's being genuine with that request, or maybe, I don't know, maybe he has personal vendetta against the comp title. Yeah. Who knows? But it seems like nonsense to me.
All right. I mean, if I'm looking at quarterbacks, I got Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, and Will Levis, for example. Yeah. In my job interview, you know what I do? I bring in a whiteboard and I said, hey, let's go over some things. Yep. I want to see what you see, what, and so forth. If I'm in a cake, let's go way back a few years, Connor Cook. I want, not from him, maybe I'll ask him, but I want to find out from other people, why was he never a captain at Michigan State? Like little, like things like that, because I'm just trying to get a gauge on the guy I'm getting. You know, and that's...
I would ask it. Those types of questions, I think, are very important, because, yeah, that's headline news, in my opinion. Why is the quarterback not a captain?
Ever.
And perhaps, I don't know, maybe there is a reason. I hope that intelligently. Because if he can't, that's the answer. You know, that's why. That's what I would need to hear. I would look for those types of questions, but more than anything, I want to see his reaction to game-related stuff.
Yep.
And I want to see if his demeanor is different when I ask him about personal stuff, not... you know, gross, completely out of bounds stuff. But, you know, what was childhood like? Tell me about your high school.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite teacher? Those kinds of things. It's not about the specific answers. It's how they are answering it, how they relate to you. Are they saying things that really resonate with you? Is this somebody I want to work with? Is this somebody who's going to fit in with the culture that I have on my team? That's what you kind of need to figure out. And again, I'm not trying to sound condescending, but area scouts might not be at that level of interview experience to pick up those kinds of things. So maybe you need an adult in the room to ask the questions. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar enough with the entire process to say that. There's a lot that you can learn. You get 15 minutes. Give me 7.5 minutes on the whiteboard. I want to draw some stuff up that we do pretty regularly,
yep.
And I want to see how he processes that and how he reacts to me asking about it. Then 7.5 minutes, I want to find out as best I can, what type of kid is he? What's his character? All of those things are going to be bolstered by outside opinion. I'm going to talk to other people about it. I'm going to compile all that together and look at the whole picture,
yep.
And see if I can kind of figure this out. And this is a very, you know, summarized version of the entire draft process. You know, and there's obviously more of it's going to be on his film. What type of player am I seeing? But I'm making, if we're talking, you know, Levis, Stroud, Young, this is a multi-million-dollar investment in a guy that has to be my franchise. He has to be my franchise.
Yep.
I'm interviewing him, so to speak, but I might not get a choice of who I get, especially if you're like Indianapolis. You know, you're not in the top spot.
Right.
You need to know how he relates to others. You need to know what his teammates think of him. He might not be the one that I would want to take, but he might be the guy that I'm going to take because of where I am. Is that good enough? That question needs to be answered. And, you know, maybe it's like, okay, I'm fine with any of the three of them. Whichever one I get is fine with me. And you're drawing up how you're going to coach him,
mm-hmm.
You know, what you're going to go over with him when you bring him in, you know, just to get kind of an early start on it. But you've got to know who he is. You got to know his level of character, his level of maturity. Extremely important, in my opinion. And sometimes the player might not have all of that. And sometimes he might surprise you a little bit. But you've got to be able to ask the right questions in order to do that. So it's that piece of it more than anything is what's critically important about the combine, pro days, you know, the individual visits, all of that. It's getting to know who the kid is.
Yeah. You know, and part of doing that is that the people going in, they have to be prepared to know who they're talking to. And, you know, for example, I've got Najee Harris in the room. You know, do I ask him about, growing up at times in a homeless shelter, being in a car? Yeah,
yep.
just so I get to know you better. Neil, always a pleasure, sir. Appreciate you more than you know, as you know that.
Absolutely. My pleasure as always. I hope to keep doing it.
Oh, no, that's a given. You and I don't know if the audience is having fun, but you and I are having a blast. So
every week's an audition. That's the way I see it.
Perfect. Well, you passed this one, so we'll give you another shot next week.
All right. Let's do it.